Para-X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Everyone, and thanks again for joining us for another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Mildred, and I am sitting in tonight for Dr. Kelly. So if you did not get a chance to listen to part 1 or part 2 of the Preston Dennett interview, tonight we are finishing that interview with part 3. And in part 1, he talked about extraterrestrials, his UFO research. In part 2, he also continued to expand on extraterrestrials, some of his books, of course, and UFO experiences. And then tonight, he is going to talk about some of the differences between remote viewing and out-of-body experiences, a little bit on the Men in Black, something about near-death experiences, and then, of course, how he is able to take his consciousness out of his body and actually go and visit, yes, you heard me, the other side. And so that in and of itself is going to be very, very interesting. And then we will finalize this segment tonight with the Haunted Report. So as always, sit back, grab a bag of popcorn, really think about what you learned in part one and part two, and then enjoy, of course, part three of the Preston Dennett interview. Stay tuned, and thanks for listening.
Yeah, I think they're kind of the same phenomena to a certain extent. They're definitely related. With remote viewing, people are able to do it while they're awake or just sitting there, which is true with out-of-body exploring, but much more difficult, I think. I think remote viewing is like a minor form of astral travel where you are sending out a piece of yourself, perhaps, or a piece of your consciousness, and it's very effective. With remote viewing, I think the main challenge is people have to learn to trust their impressions, and that can be difficult because you can have a flood of them. And it's hard to make sense sometimes of what you're seeing. I've done remote viewing. I've done it very successfully a number of times. Just recently, a guy, you know, wanted to experiment with it. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And he set up something on his table, and I instantly saw an image, you know, when I went to look, of a lemon or an orange. And it turned out to be an orange. I'm like, wow, pretty much a direct hit. So it's easy to do. Anyone can do it. I think some people will have a hard time with it, but really it's not hard.
When I'm going to tell you how when I was at the conference and they held up this envelope and they said, draw what's in this envelope. Do you really know what the first thing was that went through my mind? Absolutely nothing. Dead, complete dead air. Couldn't tell you in a million years what they were holding in that envelope. Then, all of a sudden, I get a flash. And the flash was something just really weird. And you were right. When you had said before, you get these little flashes, and you're like, I don't know if I'm putting this in the right context or what. But what I did is I saw a flash of something out in, like, the forest. And what I did is I said, all right, fine. I see a flash of the forest. So I'm going to start drawing a forest scene. And in my forest, if I had to draw a picture, I'm going to put a little cabin. And I'm going to make some trees. And I'm going to put some sun going right through the trees. I'm going to have a little creek here with some water and some rocks and all that. And that's what I would have out in a forest because that would be very obvious. Well, guess what? He opens up the envelope and he pulls out this thing. And that's exactly what was in the envelope. But maybe you might agree or disagree with me on this, that it's not so much the fact that we can always see things, but just don't you think that there's just some kind of a natural thought process that goes along with something? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think for some people it's easier, for people who are able to easily visualize. I know in my case, when I'm successful, it's usually with things that I'm already drawn to, like ships or animals or natural disasters or things like this. One thing where I've been successful is like people will give me a gift, and then I've got the box right in front of me, you know, and I can kind of like, all right, let's try this.
Right.
And, I remember I did that with my sister-in-law. I'm like, she's like, try and see what's inside, you know, knowing, because we like to play around. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm seeing a caged animal. That makes no sense at all, because I know that just can't be. And she laughed. She says, open it. And it was actually an elephant, a statue of an elephant.
Right. No, but that's right. That's right, because one of the things that they held up in the envelope, again, was another image of a car, which was like a Lamborghini or something like that. And I said, I saw a car, all right? But then I said, no, that's not possible because we already saw a car. in like three illustrations before. And guess what it was? It was a car. So do you think that sometimes we can second guess ourselves?
Yeah. For me, I know that's a big problem. And that's one of the things I hesitate to experiment too much with remote viewing, because I don't know how to separate images from my own thoughts to, whereas with an out-of-body experience, you're there, and you just have to look at it. You know, there's no interpretation involved.
Right. I want you to tell the story of, if you feel it's safe to tell the story, of the Area 51 viewing. See, I couldn't figure out from an out-of-body versus remote viewing what the correlation or the absolute difference was between them, and that's what we're trying to demonstrate here. So when you're out of body, can you tell the Area 51 story, or do you feel like we should go to a different story?
Oh, no, sure, I can tell it. Yeah, because when you go out of body, it works best if you have an intention. Like, I want to see a deceased loved one, or learn about past lives, or visit a certain location, because it requires a lot of focus, and it's easy to slip back into sort of the dream state. And one of the things I wanted to do was visit Area 51 in Nevada, which is, of course, known for UFOs and UFO research, secret government base. And how I, you know, hit upon this idea was I had read an article in Fate magazine, and the editor asked the readership to remote view or psychically visit Area 51 in whatever way made them comfortable. And a bunch of people responded. Interestingly, it was all women. There was about 20 respondents. And each viewed Area 51 in various ways. Some just got psychic impressions. Some remote viewed. Some went out of body. And I was thrilled by the article because there was independent corroboration of a number of details, which I had heard in my own research from whistleblower accounts, people who've actually been inside. I thought, well, shoot, you know, I can do out-of-body stuff. I should try it. And it took a while before I finally, you know, remembered to do it. Popped out of body one morning and floated above my house. And I'm like, I'm actually doing it. I'm doing it. What did I want to do? And I remembered. So let's visit Area 51. And I sort of shouted out the command or thought it in my mind and began moving across the sky towards the east. Here in California, I thought, well, this is going to take an awfully long time, you know, faster, faster. And boom, I popped, you know, I kind of teleported there. And I've done this, you know, I went from LA to San Diego once in seconds. So sometimes you travel slow, sometimes you just can teleport, kind of. I guess that's the best way to put it. And I popped out over this dry lake bed and immediately started descending. I was only 50 feet up in the air or so. And came down next to this hangar-like building, and I have to tell you, I was breathless with excitement. I'm always just so amazed when this happens and when I'm successful at it. I thought, wow, you know, no one's ever going to believe this. I'm here. I'm actually here. And my first impression was how vast this place was. I mean, I knew it was large, but being there inside of it, I kind of assumed that these hangars, which I'd seen, you know, pictures of, were more closely spaced together. But they weren't. They were some, you know, miles apart, some of them, which I found out was true. So that I thought was kind of interesting. I thought, well, here's a hangar. All I have to do is go inside, and I might see, you know, all these things people have been describing. I might actually see gray ETs. And that thought frightened me. I got a little bit of a chill, excuse me, a chill of fear there. And it was just enough to pull me directly back into my body. Instantly. So I was pretty disappointed. The whole experience was cut short. But I wanted to do it again, and I tried again and again, and I couldn't do it. But I did have one experience that I did recall pretty much in the form of a dream, but I could tell it wasn't. Sometimes you'll remember these out-of-body experiences in sort of a dreamlike way, as snippets of dreams or a lucid dream. And that's what happened in this case. I got inside. And I was being guided. Someone took me there, a spirit guide, me and a couple of other people, and was giving us a sort of a tour. And I forgot most of it, but what I do recall is that this was an extremely large area, and that what you see on the surface is the tip of the iceberg, really literally, this thing goes many stories underground, which I have read about, to be fair. And it reminded me of a mall, sort of like a giant building, but in reverse, going underground, and just filled with all kinds of rooms and experiments and large chambers the size of a gymnasium. But what I remember very clearly was coming upon a person who was genetically altered or damaged, a very short person who was bald with a misshapen face, very pale, not fully intelligent as we would think of it, but certainly, you know, aware and human, but deformed. And I had the immediate impression that this was a worker who had lived their entire life at the base and was used as sort of a servant, or I don't want to say slave, but that's essentially what they were, and lived their entire life there. It was a very dark energy, very uncomfortable and difficult for me to sustain, which is why I think, you know, 'cause I was so horrified at seeing the treatment of this person, that it was difficult for me to you know, retain the memory of.
Well, didn't you say somebody else saw that too?
Yeah, someone else had the same exact impression. So, I mean, pretty close. I don't want to say exact, but close enough where there was some corroboration there, I think.
So how long ago did you have that vision?
Have to look it up, but it was a good 4 or 5 years ago.
All right. So then, of course, the next question, and I had a I had a gentleman on my show a year and a half ago who had a little visit by the Men in Black. And the reason why I'm bringing that up with this is because usually when people are, like, I'm sure you've told this story before elsewhere, and then all of a sudden, like with this guy that I interviewed, he somehow figured something out of something or whatever, and all of a sudden he started getting visits from, yep, you heard me, the Men in Black. Although, what's your interpretation of that? Do you feel a little reserved about wanting to share some things because you don't know who's going to show up on your doorstep?
Me? No, personally, not at all. I'm very passionate about the subject. I'm not afraid of, you know, dying. I am to a certain extent, but I'm, you know, any day is a good day to die, and if someone wants to threaten me, let them go ahead. I've been very upfront about my research, and I'm not backing down. So I'm not afraid of that so much. I haven't had personally experiences with what I would call the Men in Black. I have had some phone problems, some email problems, some what appears to be surveillance. And did get a threatening phone call from some guy who claimed to be, you know, highly placed within government.
Really?
And tried to, you know, threaten me off of doing UFO research.
Interesting.
I was flattered. Like, I thought, hey, good, I'm getting close. I'm causing some waves or getting some attention.
Yeah, that's what happened. That's what this one guy was saying at the conference. I think that was that Joe guy, I think. As soon as he started revealing stuff or getting too close to what they didn't want to be heard from a larger, you know, masses or whatever, he started getting the same type of situation. And that's what happened with this guy that I interviewed, too. I don't know what he did or how he discovered something, but he literally had them show up on his doorstep. And my question to you would be this, because everybody wants to kind of know, are the Men in Black part of the government, do you think, or do you think they're ET related?
I think they're ET related, the true Men in Black.
Yeah.
Because they show up instantly when someone has a photograph or an alien artifact.
Yep.
Or some really profound experience.
Yep.
With UFOs or an insight, and can be confused with government agents.
Yep.
Which are often called Men in Black, but really aren't.
Right.
So yeah, I do believe they're ET. They look human, but they're not.
Yeah.
They're very pale. They've got strange eyes. They walk strange. They talk strange. that can appear and disappear.
Yeah.
I don't get a whole lot of those cases. I've talked to some people who've had problems with Men in Black and government agents.
Really?
Their hypnotic tapes were stolen. One lady, one guy wrote down all his UFO experiences, put the envelope on the mantle, boom, it's gone.
Really?
No sign of a break-in. I don't know who did that, but it could be interpreted as the ET Men in Black or the government Men in Black.
Interesting. I think a lot of people are interested in that piece right there because, you see them on TV and no one can really put their finger on if they're government or they're something from outer space or whatever. But I hope they never show up at my doorstep. I don't really feel like I know a lot to be able to show up at my doorstep, but the closer you get to revealing the truth and, this whole hype with Area 51 this year, or was that last year? But, well, when we had that issue, I'll tell you, it's just like, when we're talking about Area 51 anyway, I think they, from what I understand, they moved a lot of their sensitive stuff to another location. Is that your understanding?
I've heard that. I don't know that it's true. I don't have firsthand information on it, but I can tell you that you still can't get inside Area 51.
Right.
And it's still top secret and still active.
Right.
And for that matter, you could probably point to every other Air Force base or military base and get some real information about UFOs. We're neck deep involved in this stuff.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, and the way they're going at it with what they're trying to televise or at least put on television, I can see that it's really heading towards the forefront here. Even more interest in UFOs right now than the paranormal. I mean, it's amazing who gets a back seat and who gets a front seat once in a while on this stuff. So on the out-of-body experiences and stuff like that, do you do a lot of that? Do you continue to, you heard the old saying, if you don't use it, sometimes you lose it. Do you do that relatively frequently, or what do you do with that stuff?
It comes in waves. I'll go through a period where I become very much focused on that, and that can go for a year or two without really profound experiences, but generally speaking, it's a couple per month at least, which are generally very small, where I'll pop out and walk around the house for a few minutes and don't have really anything profound to report. There'll be periods where I remember, not too long after Robin Williams, the comedian, passed away, committed suicide. For whatever reason, that got me interested in thinking about these things, and I had a long series of very profound out-of-body episodes, which went on for a couple of months. And just so it comes in waves, depending on how busy my life is and if I'm feeling the need to get a taste of the other side, because it's hard living on Earth, and sometimes you need to just get a little reminder of the spiritual realms and how extraordinarily beautiful they are. Astral projection is kind of a misnomer. The truth is, that's our true home. That's where we really live. That's our superior body. And we're projecting down here into the physical plane. That's where, you go over there and you can see that that's the real world. And that this world is a pale reflection of the astral realms.
Interesting. So does this correlate at all with, have you talked to a lot of near-death experience people who have actually passed away, died, and then come back? Would you say that there's any similarity or difference between what you're describing and what they've described?
Yeah, there's no difference. The only difference is that near-death experiences are generally spontaneous and involuntary and uncontrolled. They follow a much more set pattern where someone finds himself out of body or sucked up into a tunnel of light and deposited into what I would call the heavenly realms, the other side where people generally go when they die and they have a message given and are returned. Whereas with out of body stuff, you can sort of explore the physical realm a little bit with your leisure, but often do go through a tunnel to the other side and you can meet deceased relatives, but you can have a much wider variety of experiences. You can meet enlightened people, people who have, you know, become spiritually enlightened. You can go to healing temples. You can go to places of learning. You can learn about past lives. Go to the Akashic Records and learn all kinds of things.
Interesting. So what's your favorite? What's the favorite place that you've actually managed to actually see and visit?
Oh, it's all great. I love it all, so it's kind of a trick question. But yeah, I love going to the other side and meeting, you know, my mother, which was kind of the whole purpose for me doing it. I've had a number of people pass away in my life, and I've pretty much always been able to meet them at some point. Like, my best friend died of alcoholism, and that was real rough. And he was not where I would normally meet people who have passed away. He was at a much lower realm. There are what I would describe as hellish realms, which aren't like pits of fire or anything. I mean, that's not what I've seen, but just more lower energy places. But yeah, my favorite is probably the higher realms, because what you'll find is you'll be out of body, and then you leave your astral body and go up into a higher dimension. And probably the highest, I'd say, what I've ever been is, I mean, in the Eastern religions, they've got this all mapped out to different planes, like the physical plane, etheric, astral, buddhic, atmic, causal realm. They've got it all mapped out. And here in the Western, you know, culture, we don't have it quite outlined to that degree. But I've certainly experienced that, and I feel like one of the higher realms I went to was what we would think of as the Akashic Library. And supposedly this is records all the events in your life, past and future for that matter. And that sounded very interesting to me. I've read of other accounts of people doing it. That's kind of always been my motivation. I read all the books on it. I'm like, well, this person did it. If they did it, so can I. And so I tried to do it. And it took a number of attempts, but finally did it. And it was glorious. I have to tell you, I'm by no means a perfect person. But when I popped out of body and, you know, attempted to do that, I went up levels and levels. And there was one point where I got through this level and I could just feel everything that was, you know, I don't want to say evil, but maybe not evolved within me. All the hate and anger and greed that's within me just was filtered out. And I came up to this level, this dimension, which was like nirvana. I mean, it was the best place I've ever seen, and so beautiful, very much earth-like, but the colors are extraordinary, and everything glows from within. And I was taken into this beautiful rose quartz kind of building, which looked like the, you know, a cap of very Roman architecture. Later saw drawings from other people, and I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what it looked like. And I was taken into this room and shown a bunch of my past lives. Yeah, it was really a wonderful experience. That was probably one of my favorite, for sure.
I'd be afraid of not being able to get back into my body. Have you ever been afraid of not being able to pop back into your lying body?
Sometimes I'm like, wow, I'm really, really far out this time. And I've been out for an hour or two, and I'm like, gosh, I probably should go back. And you start to feel a pull towards your body. But no, I'm not afraid of that, because we have what's called the silver cord. I've seen it. I don't normally see it. Some people never see it. But I looked for it and finally saw it one day. And it's something that is attached to your physical body and will pull you back. No, there's no danger of getting lost or possessed or being locked out or anything like that. It's as safe as sleeping. And I looked at everything I could find on the literature on this, because there's some talk of, oh, this is dangerous, you shouldn't do that. I couldn't find a single case of anyone who's been injured or hurt or died or something as a result of doing this. I found the opposite. I found over 20 cases of people who've been physically healed of a huge variety of, you know, not only like cuts and bruises or conditions like that, but colds, flus, sarcoidosis, a very serious liver disease, undiagnosed illnesses. Robert Monroe, he had a healing. Marilyn Hughes, one guy was cured of MS. I had some problems with arthritis, got a healing of that, been to a healing temple on one occasion. It was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. So, what I found is it's actually very safe and extraordinarily beneficial in a lot of ways.
So who would, if the audience is interested in wanting to read up a little bit more on this, what would you recommend, or where would they go? Do you have a book on this, or do you have a place that they can go and purchase a book to read up more on about Adabati?
Oh, yeah. There's quite a bit of information on this. I do have a book on it called Out of Body Exploring a Beginner's Approach, which I think is very, approachable. And that's one of the reasons I wrote it that way, because a lot of these books can be very dry and analytical and technical. And I find it most effective if people read actual accounts, and that will inspire them. So, I've definitely got a good book on this, which I would recommend. I would absolutely recommend Robert Monroe's books. Also, William Buhlmann. I love his books. Robert Peterson. There's a lot of literature on this. It's all over the internet. And I would very much recommend people try. You don't need any special abilities. It's a natural human talent. Again, it's very safe. The benefits are unbelievable. And it's not hard to do. It's one of the easiest psychic skills to do. Most people will have at least one out-of-body experience in their life, or something very much. Flying dreams are often half-remembered out-of-body experiences. So yeah, I can't recommend it enough. It's a simple matter of physically relaxing, mentally relaxing, and then doing visualizations and affirmations.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyone can do it.
Can these books be found on Amazon?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And again, did you say you have a title of a particular book that you've written on this that people can purchase?
Yeah, Out of Body Exploring, A Beginner's Approach. You can read an excerpt of it on my website if you'd like. And I actually counsel a lot of people. I've taught classes on how to do it successfully. I've taught half my family, those who were brave enough to do it. A lot of people are like, oh no, it's scary. And yeah, it's a little scary at first. You feel like a ghost. But once you start flying, I mean, that alone is worth the price of admission. And it is the funnest thing you will ever do. And I can't recommend it enough.
So can I fly to like Yosemite National Park? But what if I don't know where it is? Or do you have to kind of have an idea as to where you want to go and at least have your... Because what if you don't know where it is exactly?
Your spirit, in most cases, people will have spirit guides. We all have spirit friends, family on the other side, whether you know them or not, we do. And they will help you, and they're very aware of it. They love it when people are spiritually waking up. This is one of the main ET agendas as well. So yeah, you don't need to know where a location is. You can just kind of call it out. But I tell you, it's not always easy. It is easier if you are familiar with a location, like maybe a childhood home or a vacation spot you visited many times. That works. A really easy way for people who are like beginners is to call out for a deceased relative or a spirit guide. Say, please, I'd love to see you. And that's what I call the love bridge. And you can bypass all the exit sensations and all those sort of difficulties of trying to get out of your body, and you will just wake up out of body on the other side instantly. And that works very well. So that's something I would recommend. But yeah, a place or a person, just very strongly focus on that. Another warning is what often happens when people are out of body is it's difficult to stay on the physical plane because the astral body is naturally drawn towards the higher astral realms. So you may very well find yourself pulled out of body and then pulled up to the other side, which is all well and good because that's where all the fun is.
But you can still get back to your original body, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. The problem is not getting back to your body. The problem is staying out.
Staying out.
Yeah, so you won't have a problem with that. If you feel the least bit of fear, you will be drawn back instantly. All you have to do is think about your body, and that will usually draw you back. If you have any trouble at all, just wiggle a toe, open and close your eyes, and that'll pull you back. But yeah, generally speaking, any strong emotion will draw you right back. So it's very careful to remain sort of objective and analytical as possible while you're doing it.
So if I ask you, okay, do an experiment and come to Kelly's house, would you be able to do that, knowing that you don't really know where I live, but someone would probably bring you here?
Yeah, I think I probably could. I don't know how successful. I've tried to do this. I've tried to meet other people out of body with only limited success. You know, I've gotten pretty good at it, but I'm nowhere near like some of these experts like Robert Monroe or William Buhlman. These guys got really good at it. Marilyn Hughes, Rosalind McKnight. Some people just have a real natural talent. And I had to fight like a dog to really open this up within me. And it worked. I have to tell you, another warning is it will wake you up psychically. And in my case, I started having a lot of clairvoyant visions, a lot of precognitive dreams, a lot of psychic stuff happening. And that's generally what will happen to people. But yeah, I've tried to visit other people's homes and stuff, friends and family usually. Tried to visit people, and I will visit them, and I'm like, hey, we're out of body. Do you know we're out of body? And they're like, yeah, my brother. I argued with him. I'm like, you're going to remember this? He's like, no, I'm not going to remember. I can tell you right now, I won't.
Yeah.
And same with my sister. I'm like, how these people can say they won't remember and be aware?
Yeah.
It's strange, but what I found is we're all 100% conscious on the astral planes every night. We live a separate life that we don't remember. We will one day. But the trick is with astral travel is all about memory.
Yeah.
So if you can remember it, yeah, you can sort of bridge that gap.
Well, I'd like you to come and visit me, but I probably wouldn't know that you're here if you're here, because I don't know. Are people usually just like walking around doing their everyday thing, or are you talking from consciousness to consciousness?
Well, both. I mean, each experience is different. I've done this during the day and went in front of people and tried to manifest as a ghost, which Robert Monroe did, and a number of people can move objects. And I mean, you were talking about that.
Yeah.
And I tried. I couldn't do it. Finally, one guy says, oh, what you need to do is you need to draw vital energy from your physical body.
Yeah.
Lower your vibration a little bit.
Yeah.
And you can sort of align closer with the physical plane.
Yeah.
And you'll probably be successful.
Well, come to my house. Put it on your agenda to come to my house and move something. I'll know it's you then, okay? Because you'd remember possibly what you attempted to move in my house, correct?
Yeah, I would remember. I would probably look for something that's, unique.
Yeah.
That's what I usually do.
Yeah.
Like, no. I saw a picture here or this object, is this true?
Yeah, no, seriously, because I would notice it, right? I would notice it. Let me just put it to you that way. I notice everything. I've had things happen in this house. I would say, oh, the poltergeist is back, but then I would just need you to say, I was in your house and this is what I touched, and then all of a sudden it'd be like, yep, he was here. So I think that would be a good experiment for you, but I have to warn you, with COVID and stuff going on here, I don't necessarily run around with, everything on all the time. So I hope you're ready for that. So, people would probably go, oh my God, I mean, do you know how I live? Well, that's the risk you're going to take. But yeah, if you could try to out of body yourself and attempt to move something in my house here, and even if I say in the living room, I would notice. Okay. So that would be great. Well, my God, we have done like what I call a super show or shows here. I cannot thank you enough, Preston, for coming on and being a trooper on two to possibly maybe even three shows. What would be your final words regarding your out of body and anything else you'd like to share on this part of the segment?
That it's safe, that it's wonderful, and please just try it. The main obstacles for people is that they don't think they can do it. I'm telling you, yes, you can. And it is so worth it. So that would be my main message, is just try it. If you don't like it, don't do it. But I think you'll find it very wonderful. For me, it completely transformed my life to the better in so many different ways. And I can't recommend it enough. Yeah, it's so much fun. I love it.
Well, and give us your website again. Now, you're on Facebook as well, right?
Yep, I'm on Facebook. I have a YouTube channel. My website is pretty extensive. The address is prestondennett.weebly.com. And yeah, please feel free to contact me. I counsel people on how to do out-of-body stuff, no charge. That's how important I think this is. Because it's just so transformative.
Well, and it's very interesting too. And I think when I get up the nerve, I'm going to attempt this, but it will have to be when I'm not so inundated with so much stuff that's weighing heavy on my mind. And that's always a problem with most people. We have little time, and all of a sudden, if you want to focus on something like this, you feel like you really have to give it your undivided attention, you know, and your focus. So, well, thank you so very much for being on the shows, I should say, because most people are hearing two or three of them at this point. And I wish you the very best with your the UFO research, the out-of-body interesting research, and personal experiences that you're doing. And hopefully in the future we will check back in with you and see who you've been visiting lately. So thank you very much, Preston, for being on the show.
Hey, thank you, Kelly. I really enjoyed it.
All right, take care. And thank you, everyone, again, for listening to Paranormal Encounters podcast series.
And as they say, let's roll that haunted report. Did I hear somebody come in? Welcome to the Haunted Report. Dr. Kelly has allowed me to do the report tonight, so bear with me, please. Didn't you find those segments with Preston Dennett to be very interesting? I mean, we first start out by talking a little bit about his knowledge about extraterrestrials and the UFO ship that he actually, or ships, I should say, that he actually saw visually himself. And then he went on to research this for probably 20, 30 years. So he's been doing this a very, very long time. But then what really struck me the most is just the amount of similarity and, what do I want to say? Consistency, I think, with what people say about their experiences with extraterrestrials. Now, I know that you find this hard to believe. And the reason why you find it hard to believe is because you're probably saying to yourself, gee, I've never seen a UFO. Gee, I've never seen an extraterrestrial that I know about. And for the longest time, we have been so focused on the paranormal, poltergeist, any type of energy activity around us, and trying to put our finger on that, that we have completely ignored the fact that maybe some of these experiences might not have occurred from an apparition or a manifestation of a past or former existing person in this life, okay? So what I've done here, because I still have more questions, of course, and I think we'll all have more questions than answers, I decided to pull an article from the internet for this segment. And I want to see what you think about it, because when I was reading it, I thought, I never really thought about it that way before. And so many people have their theories, right? And Preston, you know, is very, very passionate about UFOs, extraterrestrials, and his ability to do out-of-body work. And we're all just sitting here shaking our heads going, I don't know. I'm not sure I'd be brave enough to want to jump out of my body, or I don't know. I don't know what I would do if by chance I actually did see an extraterrestrial or an aircraft for that matter. So I pulled an article from a source called The Verge, www.theverge.com. And the article is on five things serious scientists believe about extraterrestrial life. Well, if Dr. Kelly has had an experience or experiences with an extraterrestrial, whether that be potentially the haunted handprint, whether that be the fact that she woke up a couple of times without her pajamas on and felt very cleansed inside, whether that be just about anything that people go through and have miraculous healings, we all are on the fence. Is that angelic in nature? Is that something that, God has potentially sent angelically to us? Or is that some unusual, odd situation where an extraterrestrial has stepped in and performed something that we will never give it credit for? Okay, so here are five discussion points from this article. And it starts out by saying that popular culture has given a lot of ideas about what extraterrestrials might look like, behave like, and interact with us like, okay? We all know about the grays. Grays are anywhere from 3 feet tall, large head, large eyes. You know, sometimes they're wearing a jumpsuit, sometimes they're not, all the way up to the possibility being 7 feet tall. There's other types of extraterrestrials that don't even take the shape of something like that. They're humanoids, or they're like a praying mantis type. Oh my God, I don't know. I would like to meet the person who would take a picture, if they're able to, of something that looked like that. But scientists all have different thoughts on what they think about extraterrestrials. And a lot of times, a lot of focus is taken away or off this topic with the public because it would cause just a lot of hysteria. So sometimes it's better just to keep people confused and wonder what's going on out there. And I do recall Dr. Kelly saying that when she was at this conference, the experts, the ones who have studied this and have actually been part of this program, have also said that a lot of times right now, there's no cause to be alarmed by them because they haven't really done anything yet to get us alarmed about. But what would happen if all of a sudden that day changes and comes and we're not prepared for it? Well, I think from what she understood from that conference, there are missions going on behind the scenes. But on the other hand, we may never know what that looks like. All right, so let's see. One of the first things that a serious scientist believes about extraterrestrial life. Number one, they may look like us. Ooh, that's a little scary. What do I look like? When I look in the mirror, I don't see anything. That's because I am technically a ghost. So this article says that there is a gentleman by the name of Simon Conway Morris, who is an evolutionary biologist at Cambridge. And he thinks that there's a good chance that intelligent extraterrestrial life will look a lot like us. And he also believes that what we feel is important as a race, they will also attempt to mimic in any way they can to look and to be able to fit in to our race, such as our cognitive sophistication, such as our large brain size, our intelligence, our ability to make tools, our ability to understand technology. But guess what? Where did we learn all of a sudden reverse technology from? A lot of people believe that that actually came from the lessons from the aliens themselves. So how are we to know, right? Scientists believe if there's other planets that look a lot like our planet, planet Earth, that chances are very, very likely that human-like extraterrestrial intelligence on those planets is probably fairly similar to what we're going through here. Now, let's talk a little bit about this. For many, many years, scientists have been trying to go out and find intelligent life in any form on any planet, okay? And so some of these planets are so far off that they're technically not really reachable. But extraterrestrials who fly around at the, you know, like a lightning bolt very quickly, they can come and go very fast. they may have more of the ability to be able to go further and understand more about what is out there out in the universe. So the second one here is they'll send machines first. Okay. It says in this article that popular culture has extraterrestrials stepping off spacecraft onto Earth. Well, I think they've already done that, okay, judging from what it sounds like. And also, I think that sometimes there's no spacecraft that they need to step off of anyway. But scientists believe, or at least some of them, they dispute this idea because space travel is a long, far journey with a huge investment. And if aliens wanted to make contact with planet Earth, they would most likely send robots and computers first. And it's not like they would open up the hatch and we'll see a strange alien paw coming out. It's more likely to be in a robotic arm. All right, so that's their opinion. Now, if you talk to Preston and the accounts that he has stated regarding the hundreds of people who have actually either been abducted or they may have had an invisible experience, and I hate to bring Dr. Kelly up again here, but, you know, she may not have been brought onto a spaceship, but on the other hand, there's some really weird things that have been going on. And the other thing is that if they do come as a machine, I would be a little bit nervous about that because one of the discussions at the conference that she attended in Las Vegas indicated that the smarter or the more robotic we try to make machines here, there is also a chance that they become so smart that we cannot control and or stop them in any what way. And that is actually something that has been discussed in great detail about how far do we go, even with our own robots that we're making here on planet Earth. So one of the questions I have regarding these little gray men that step off, and I had heard this quite a while ago, is what are they composed of? And I think I recall somebody saying that you really can't get that close to an ET, especially if they've died in some way, because what they are made of is actually, if one were to attempt to open them up, and I think I had heard this at one time, what comes out of them is so toxic that a person cannot really stand to be around them at all without possibly dying themselves. And so whatever they are made up of, you have to ask yourself the question, how are they able to even preserve anything in Area 51 to the level that it is, or how are they containing it if it, A, doesn't decompose, B, if it does decompose, you know, how many people have died being around something like this? You have to ask yourself that question. Even if they are physically looking like a humanoid, the question ultimately remains, what is inside of it, right? So anyway, that's something to think about. Number three, they may not come in peace. One of the biggest fears that we all have, or at least many of us have, is adding another layer to our controversial life. And that layer is, if we were to have any more direct contact, I'm talking more direct, not just the indirect show that seems to be occurring on occasion, being, you know, people are observing and seeing in all kinds of forms and ways. But let's say there is more direct contact. How do we not know what's on their mind? Do they even have a mind? I think a lot of times I have heard that a lot of these extraterrestrials do not have emotions, so they cannot feel anyway. So if they're completely logical, something very Star Trek-like, especially in their thinking, then how are we to trust what we really don't understand? And so Stephen Hawking, who had passed away a few years ago, incredible scientist, has made his opinions on extraterrestrial life very clear. And it is quoted, "If aliens ever visit us, I think the outcome would be much as when Christopher Columbus first landed in America, which didn't turn out very well for the Native Americans." And he said this actually in an interview. Again, we have absolutely no idea what that contact would really look like and whether or not we would be at risk for any kind of bacteria or something that they somehow project, not necessarily in essence onto us, but just bring to this planet. You always hear when people are going off in these spaceships that they have to be very careful about stepping out of that spaceship and they have to be decontaminated because what they could bring back with them could ultimately destroy our planet. Well, if we know extraterrestrials are floating around here, whether they're in a ball-shaped form or whether they come in a spaceship of some sort, and whether they're trying to do whatever, the ultimate concern would be is what are they leaving behind, okay? Okay, so another thing is, number four, is they might, what is this one here? They may not, they may wipe us out. And again, that's contamination. The contamination, that's a dangerous possibility of what can happen when you bring something from another place onto Earth that ultimately is I don't want to say it's very Mars-like, but it could be radioactive. It could be something that we're not prepared for. And just like this COVID out there, obviously we're not prepared for it. We're trying to figure out how to save ourselves from what it's doing to the people on our planet. So I want you to just think about that for a moment. What is the reason why these ETs haven't been more aggressive to this point? Probably because they know all of these facts already, but yet they still want to make their presence known. And then, of course, the fifth one here that many of the scientists seem to be in agreement on is that they will be unpredictable. And again, we're not used to this here on our planet, and I think it would cause hysteria, and I think many people will overreact, and I think that they will soon learn that we may possibly be in a situation that we don't want to be in. So if no one's really sure what an extraterrestrial life will look like in the form that they're in or what their motives are in even contacting us as humans, who knows how they'll act? Now, keep in mind, you know, Preston and Dr. Kelly do agree. She heard, and maybe this is just all hype, but Preston is also familiar with this. There are numerous abductions of human life and people that go unnoticed every year. And it's in the thousands, it's not just in the hundreds. Now, that's pretty unnerving, and that's a little scary. But again, we have no control over whether or not something wants to take us, and just all of a sudden the person just disappears. Preston illustrated that with a couple of his ideas. So, it's possible that extraterrestrials may want to evolve like humans, to be capable of both violent aggression and peaceful compromise. Let's hope it's more the peaceful compromise here. But if evolution is based on the survival of the fittest, and this comes directly from this article, we have good reason to believe that aggressive instincts will be present in the extraterrestrials as well. And to what extent alien life can curb their aggressive instincts, or possibly self-destruct, is anyone's guess. And once again, going back to all of this is this, even though Preston has said that he really believes that there's a lot of healing that goes on with a lot of these extraterrestrials, and we're giving credit to angels and God and all this sort of thing, and what we also know that there are many forms of extraterrestrials. And with our lack of knowledge and our lack of ability to be able to know what is what from the get-go, you know, if one would have contact with these things, let's just hope that it's one that has come more in a friendly manner rather than something that wants to have another alternative in the situation. Thank you for listening to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. I hope to bring you some more interesting guests as we get into the rest of this year. And again, thank you for listening and good night.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books searching under Paranormal Encounters. Thanks for listening. Take care. And until next time,
be careful what you wish for.
The script, vocal talent, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, or Para-X Radio Network. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, Para-X Radio Network, or its sponsors. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.